The Israeli military carried out airstrikes today in the Gaza Strip, bombing what it said was a military compound and a weapons production facility run by Hamas. Israel said the strikes were in response to machine gun fire from the Palestinian territory. That follows Monday's bloodshed on the Gaza border when Israeli soldiers opened fire on Palestinian protesters, killing 60 and hospitalizing more than 1,700 in the area's worst day of violence since the 2014 Gaza War. For more, we're joined now by journalist and analyst Neri Zilber in Tel Aviv. And Gaith Al-Omari is also with us from Washington. He's a former Palestinian peace negotiator. Gaith, Israel and the U.S. are blaming Hamas for the violence. Was this an appropriate response from Israel?
But look, like everything that relates to the Palestinian-Israeli conflict, views are polarized and everyone uses the events to score political points. The reality is more complex. Among the protesters who were killed, many were Hamas members, but many were civilians. There were cases that Israel was justified to use fire. Cases were quite questionable. And so in that sense, it's a complicated reality. The question right now is, rather than trading blame, is how do you move forward in a way that ensures that something like this does not happen again?
Neri, what about you? How do you see what happened on Monday?
Yeah, I mean, Raita is absolutely correct. It's a complicated issue in general, especially given the events of the last few weeks with these marches from Gaza onto the border fence with Israel. It's a mixture of, like Raita said, unarmed civilians, really, and we've seen journalists as well as women, as well as teenagers hit by live Israeli fire. But also the Israelis are correct when they say that there are militants inside these crowds trying to foment trouble, Molotov cocktails, IEDs in live fire against Israeli troops on the other side. So it is quite complicated. I think the larger context is that Gaza itself now has been under Hamas rule for now 11 years. The territory, the conditions in the territory in terms of water, electricity, medicine, and the like, as well as unemployment, have never been worse. And we really, all of us, need to hopefully find a better way forward.
And has what happened, Neri, overshadowed any of the joy that Israelis felt about the U.S. moving the embassy to Jerusalem?
I think that's probably correct, although most Israelis are fairly firmly behind Israel and Israel's response, what Israel feels it needs to do to uphold its own sovereignty on the Gaza frontier. But yeah, I mean, as far as international attention, we all saw the split screen with the U.S. embassy unveiling on Monday and on one side, and then the tragic events on the Gaza border on the other side. So international attention is definitely skewed more towards Gaza. You know, arguably, it's a more important story.
Gaith, do you think that after this move of the embassy to Jerusalem, that the U.S. can any longer be an honest broker in this conflict?
I mean, the question of honest broker is one that is very, how shall I say it, elastic word. The reality is the U.S. is the only available broker. Not because it's honest or dishonest, it's because the U.S. is the only one that has the power, the resources, the diplomatic wherewithal to do it. But in the short term, the Palestinians and many of the Arabs are so frustrated and angry with the Jerusalem move that in the short term, the U.S. cannot play that role. But in the medium and long term, there is no alternative but for the U.S. leading such a process.
For a two-state solution?
Again, there is no other solution. You have two national movements, Zionism, where the Jewish nationalism that requires a state of its own, a Jewish state, that's Israel, and Palestinian nationalism that requires a state of its own. Right now, there is no possibility for this solution because the politics on both sides is so complicated. In the longer term, though, there is no other solution because none of the two nations will be satisfied with living in a state that's not their own.
You agree with that, Neri?
I do. You know, as far as the U.S. role here, we've discussed it on this program a few months ago. But as far as the whole decision taken to move the U.S. embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, when it was announced, how it was announced, and then ultimately what we saw this past week was an unforced error in the sense that the U.S. didn't need to hold the ceremony this week of all weeks. This week marked 70th anniversary of Israel's independence, right, as far as the Gregorian calendar, and then also the Palestinian Nakba Day, the Day of Catastrophe. So the U.S. Officials should have seen this coming and could have picked any other week of the year, really, to hold this event. So obviously, it doesn't help their standing regionally, and especially vis-a-vis the Palestinian Authority.
But isn't it also possible that they did that on purpose, that they wanted to do this on the 70th anniversary of what they see as Israel's independence?
Sure, but Israel itself celebrated a few weeks ago according to the Hebrew calendar. So it could have been done then. But in terms of doing it on purpose, I wouldn't put that past this current U.S. administration.
Gaith, what about on the Palestinian side? The Associated Press reports today that the Palestinian leader Mahmoud Abbas is preparing to pursue a war crimes complaint against Israel at the International Criminal Court. How has the political situation of the Palestinians changed as a result of the embassy move and the violence in Gaza? Has it changed the relationship between Abbas's Palestinian Liberation Organization and the other main political force, Hamas?
Actually, the relation has been strained now for more than a decade, since Hamas forcibly took over Gaza back in 2007, I believe. In the last year, however, what we have seen is that the Palestinian Authority, under Mahmoud Abbas, has instated a number of punitive measures against Gaza, cutting salaries for employees there, refusing to pay for electricity, refusing to pay for medicine. And in that sense, the PA is a partner in the current tragedy that is a humanitarian situation in Gaza. And in a sense, while Israel, of course, is to blame for the situation because of the blockade, the PA is also to blame. Abbas is simply not fulfilling his responsibility as a leader of the Palestinian people, and he's a partner, unfortunately, in what happened.
Neri, do you think that the Israelis are prepared to really relax the border controls on Gaza? It's been described as an open-air prison for Palestinians. We heard this week that maybe the Egyptians played a role in tamping down some of the violence in exchange for some relaxation at the borders.
Right. Well, I think it's important to remember that Israel is one party in this very complicated situation. So as Laith mentioned, the Palestinian Authority under Mahmoud Abbas also has a role to play. Egypt, there's a border crossing between Gaza and Egypt that's been, for the most part, closed over the past few years. So Egypt has a role to play, and then, of course, Israel. The rub is that none of these parties that I just mentioned really want to relent in the face of a territory controlled by a terrorist organization. So we'll also need to see some flexibility, as it were, from the rulers in Gaza, from Hamas. So ideally, all these parties could come together and, at least in the short term, come to some kind of arrangement that will ease the situation for the civilians, for the people of Gaza. That's the hope.
I want to ask each of you about the bigger picture here. This is not happening in a vacuum. It happened just shortly after President Trump pulled the U.S. out of the Iran nuclear deal. And there are a lot of concerns about what might happen going forward. Are you worried, first of all, you, Gaith, are you worried about a war between Israel and Iran?
Of course I'm worried about such a war. There's an escalation. Iran has been, for the last few years, and certainly since the JCPOA was signed, has been acting in a very aggressive way throughout the region. We see it in Yemen, we see it in Bahrain, we see it in Iraq, in Syria. And for Israel, Iran is coming to very close to the Israeli borders. Recently, Iran has sent a drone into Israeli airspace. So they are very worried, and they are responding. And they're not the only ones. The Jordanians are very worried of having Iran along their borders. The Gulf States are doing this. So the situation is getting tense, and I think it's very important for Iran right now to recalibrate and to re-examine whether or not it wants to continue in its aggressive regional posture.
Look, a full-scale war I don't think is in the cards. Israel is still the most powerful military force in the region. But, you know, miscalculation and escalation are always a possibility in this part of the world. What's more likely is that we'll see this kind of tit-for-tat back and forth. Israel bombs Iranian assets in Syria. And then at some point, Iran and its allies and proxies in the immediate neighborhood will probably respond. But that can also, I imagine, be contained, although it'll be a bit more difficult. So a war is always likely, but I don't think a given.
It's Neri Zilber, journalist and analyst, and we've been speaking also with Gaith Alomari, former Palestinian peace negotiator, both fellows at the Washington Institute for Near East Policy. Thanks to both of you for joining us.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure, Jeremy.